I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host for 2 hours of a safe space for independent thought. Next hour, as every Thursday, we will have, I believe, Forrest Thigpen from Americans for Prosperity coming in. There's movement on income tax relief here in Mississippi. I'm confused. I've read a couple of things about it. I'm not sure where they've landed, but we'll get the latest on maybe saving a little bit of money. I also saw something about the legislature considering a tax, a gasoline tax holiday. I can't remember exactly what the portion of a gallon of gas goes to state taxes, but it's something. I have yet to see, as oil has gone down, a barrel of oil has gone down by over 30% last I looked. I didn't look this morning. Have not seen prices at the pump coming down by 30%, so we still wait on that. But we'll find out what our tax situation here is and anything else that the Mississippi legislature. They're still in session, and I think they're getting to appropriations bills too, so we'll probably find out a little bit about the spending. You know, it's pretty easy to give people their money back or let them keep their money if you shrink the size of a government. And you would think in a supermajority red Republican-led state, we would have a nice, tiny, tidy little government here. But that has not been the case. So we'll see where we stand. It is St. Patrick's Day. To me, it's it's a good excuse for everybody to have a drink or 10. And for me, it's a great excuse to always play the Dropkick Murphys, the Irish bar band. I got some good Fight the Power songs there, so maybe I'll try to plug some of those into the show today. Quote of the day today from an Irishman is from George Bernard Shaw. I did a quote of his the other day. I called him George Bernard Shaw, and a buddy of mine corrected me in a very nice way. He said, well, there was no way you could have known, but I can't remember. It's George Bernard Shaw. He said, never wrestle with pigs. You both get dirty, and the pig likes it. I think this goes to political discourse. I think this kind of dovetails with my show yesterday, where I explained this fighting amongst us little people out here, pitted one against another. Does you no good, but that... never wrestle with pigs. You both get dirty and pigs like it is a good rule for your interactions on social media, too. We got a sound of the day today. This is a new introduction to this part of the show each day. This is a beautiful sound. It turns out that New York, the state of New York, may not be completely lost. I'm on record here as kind of bucking the system on conservative shows and of people on the right who say they want California to slide into the ocean and you might as well just get rid of, you know, whatever bad can happen to New York City, we're all in favor of. And I constantly say, look, there's good people in these places. I don't want California is a beautiful state. I love California. The fact it's been hijacked and run by a bunch of authoritarian tax and spender people is really not the fault of the good people there that don't vote for those people. And California said, I'd rather have California reclaim itself to some degree. But anyway, New York is another one of the areas we look at and just think, what are they doing up there? I've been shocked by what they've put up with under COVID. This once considered very brash and independent city of, you know, tough hustle and bustle just turned into a bunch of soy boys. But this was this is sound of the day. This is from an NHL hockey game. And, you know, I guess it's, what is this, Women's History Month, Women's Empowerment Month? I'm not sure. I didn't know that I needed to make the transition on March 1st from Black History Month to Women's Month. So I'm derelict in my duty there. Sorry, ladies. But they were observing this at a hockey game in New York. I think this was the Islanders game. And they bring in a special guest, and I want you to hear the response of the crowd. It's beautiful.
Fans, the New York Rangers, along with presenting partner Skates, are proud to host Women's Empowerment Night. Tonight, we'd like to salute Governor Kathy Hochul, the first female governor of New York State. Governor Hochul began her career in public service in the greater Buffalo area, served in Congress, and was twice elected lieutenant governor. Here to drop tonight's ceremonial first puck, a champion of women's rights and leader of the great state of New York, please welcome Governor Kathy Hochul.
So I don't know if you can really tell by that. It's got a little bit of background noise to it. I apologize. The audio is not perfect, but it is nothing but an entire arena full of boos for this woman. And she comes out. She has to walk out onto the ice to nothing but boos from her people in New York. This is Kathy Hochul, who has succeeded Andrew Cuomo. And she has been one of the true COVID cult tyrants and a real wackadoodle job that God brought you the vaccine and you're not doing God's will if you don't inject yourself with this experimental clot shot. And she's just absolutely horrible. It's one of those things where, you know, for those people who are the Lindsey Grahams who say they want to assassinate Vladimir Putin, I tell you, you better be careful what you wish for. There's no telling who takes his place. Andrew Cuomo, being one of the worst governors in the country, gets run out on a rail, and they actually have somebody who may be worse, and that's this Kathy Hochul. So, good news, New York is not completely lost. There are citizens there that are not down with the plan up there. Not a very popular woman. I bought this morning, before I came on air, to talk about the utter contempt for political office holders across the board, in my estimation anyway. I bought the book, The Anarchist Handbook, this morning by Michael Malice. You know, as a libertarian, I want the absolute smallest government at every level with the least amount of power. So anytime I hear of anything, you know, anybody who says to me, I just wish they would reach across the aisle, I wish they would get things done, I rebel against that every time. First thing I tell people is, have you ever noticed when they do things, they're almost always bad? I don't even know why I threw almost in there. Every time politicians do something, it makes things worse. Now, when they undo things, that's when I can support bipartisanship or anything, when they're undoing things that they've done before, but I don't like people to try to get things done. But as a libertarian, I want the smallest government that is absolutely possible. But I may have to go just full-on no government at this point. I want some more knowledge on how this works. Michael Malice's book, The Anarchist Handbook, is now on Kindle for like $4.99. I need to do more reading anyway. He's a very clever guy. He's a good writer. It's interesting, too. Michael Malice has become, he's a pretty popular person out there. He's been on Joe Rogan's show, gotten a lot of following from that. He's a pretty prolific writer. He's a Twitter troll. I think that's probably where he gets most of his press, and if anybody's been listening to the show for a long period of time, I think in the first year I was here, I used to have Trey Goff came on. He was a young guy, a libertarian, a real thinker. The guy was so smart, I would have to tell him during the breaks and sometimes on the segments to dumb it down for us a little bit. He was extremely well-read in libertarian philosophy, and he would get into some of the wonky words of libertarianism. I'd have to settle him down. But my understanding is that Trey Goff is gone, and he is now Michael Malice's personal trainer. Trey Goff was a lifter, was in great shape, young guy. But I think he is actually training Michael Malice in the gym. But people associate anarchism with, you know, the black hoodie wearing, Molotov cocktail throwing protesters at the G7. I think a lot of people associate anarchists with the left, in particular just troublemakers. They see things like Antifa as being anarchists, but they're not. Anarchism It was actually just the absence of government. And at this point, I mean, I'm talking about from the county level, from the Gluckstadt that steps in with their tiny little power that they have there at the Board of Aldermen to stop anybody from opening up a business to provide a plant medicine to its citizens, all the way up to the federal government that has just destroyed this country, a clear and present danger to the future of the United States. Anarchy, I believe, is preferable to all of those things. And if you want to get this book, if you want to understand this idea, this kind of libertarian version of anarchy, to read about it and not rebel against it automatically, thinking that that just means everybody's in the streets preying on each other. It just means voluntary cooperation between people. People would get together and take care of their own policing. They would get together and take care of their own roads. Most Americans think that these things just can't be done without the government. But it is possible. And I think that I'm not sure if it's really possible, even in my libertarian idea, to have a government that restrains itself in any way, because people don't pay attention. And what happens in government, the way it ratchets up, is that one person comes into power or one group comes into power and they give themselves a little bit more power. And the people, the majority that just elected them, just says, well, that's great. We elected them to get things done. Well, ultimately, people get disillusioned with that person, and the opposite force comes to power. They keep the powers that the previous administration had. They tack on a few of their own, and they got into office. So the majority of people who voted this person into office or this group into office doesn't pay any attention to the new powers that they've gotten. And back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, they constantly ratchet up their power, ratchet up their spending, ratchet up their regulations. And it may be that you would have to have, in a libertarian society, people who are content with not having much power. And I'm not sure if you can keep those people out of government, so I may just go on full-on anarchist. I'll get through Michael Malice's book and let you know. It was interesting. Michael Malice had been talking about this for a while, and I was looking at his Twitter feed. He does have a pretty entertaining Twitter feed. And somebody had sent him a message publicly on Twitter. It said, Michael Malice, after over 10 years, today was my last day on the job. You always say, quote, they're just following orders, and it hit hard. I'm done being a thug for the government to use me however they see fit. And this was actually a police officer that was resigning his position. Now, it is sad to hear that somebody with a good thinking person actually leaves the police force, but it is nice to know that somebody in that kind of position can realize that they are just being used as an enforcement arm of these corrupt governments. I've said it a million times here. I'm not anti-police. The police do heroic work, but they also carry out revenue generation for corrupt little fiefdoms and governments, all the way up to the federal level, where we've seen what's happened to our own Department of Justice, FBI, those kinds of things. So this is somebody who's checking out and saying, I will no longer be a thug for the system. There's something to be said for that. I know that's not necessarily popular on conservative radio. When I come back, big news yesterday, just earth-shattering. The Fed has lurched into action. Hang on, that inflation is going to be tamed any minute now. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stay with me. All right, so in order to start fighting the inflation that we see, you know, the Fed started talking about inflation and acknowledging that it was real. They tried in 2021 to tell you it was just transitory. This was just a blip. It was supply chain issues, you know, caused by COVID and its restrictions lift. It's going to go away. And then a few months later, they said, well, it may take a little longer, but it's still transitory. And then they said, well, yeah, it does appear to be real and it is escalating, but we've got the tools to fight it. This has always been their retreat when people accused them of printing up all this money was going to cause inflation. And they said, trust us. We're just printing up this money for the good of the country. And as soon as there's even a whiff of inflation, we will jump into action and just extinguish it. It was always a lie, and they knew it was always a lie. So yesterday, the Federal Reserve raised interest rates 1/4 of 1% from 0 to 0.25%. This will essentially just continue to stoke inflation. If somebody told you that you could borrow $100 with no interest, you would do that a lot if you could put it into assets that would appreciate, right? We'd do this over and over again. I know I certainly would. So people have been doing that. Now, if somebody came to you and said, well, now you can still borrow $100, but we're going to charge you a quarter on it. Wouldn't most people just go, okay, all right, that's fine. Yeah, bring it on. So they're not serious about fighting inflation. And they're scared to death to raise interest rates. I was reading a headline about Brazil. Brazil has had inflationary problems there, too. Do you want to know what Brazil's central bank has done? Let me see what their figure is. Brazil hikes key interest rates for the ninth straight time to 11.75%. See, Brazil is apparently serious about fighting their inflation. We are unserious about fighting our inflation. And I've talked about the two bad paths that the Fed has, and I think it looks like they're going to take the path that I think they're going to take, which is, it's really funny. What's being predicted is the Fed will take interest rates up to 2.5%, knowing that historically even normal rates were 6-7% until this grand experiment of the 2000s, where they've taken them down to zero and left them there bubbling between 0 and maybe 5%. When they raised into the housing crisis. But we've decided we've thrown our lot in with endless debt spending. And they're talking now that the Federal Reserve might raise rates up to 2.5%. And at that point, there are already predictions on Wall Street that that will be followed by rate cuts. That 2.5% is the top. Now, this is always a little tough to just say these things because I understand what they mean. And I know a lot of people, and not being judgmental, a lot of people know a lot of things that I don't know. People don't really understand what interest rates mean and why this is so dangerous. And they've seen zero, so they think, well, 2.5%, that seems high because that's going to put your 30-year mortgage closer to 4 to 5% than it's been this 3%. But those with historical context understand that the last time we had inflation this bad, that we raised interest rates to 20% to stop all the money sloshing around in the economy to tamp down inflation. We are so incredibly unserious about it this time. So the Fed has two bad paths, and the path that seems like they're going to do is they're going to hyperinflate the currency. They're going to let inflation spiral out of control. And then I believe, and caller Joe had called, but I think we were off air talking about it. I talked about the two bad paths and that the Federal Reserve is going to just blow up the dollar because they just don't have the stomach to take asset prices down. If you raise interest rate, then houses become worth less, stocks become worth less, bonds become worth less, and I don't think that they will actually do that because they're chickens and the people who control the purse strings have got assets. They want those things to always go up. And Joe and I had talked off air, and he said, well, there is kind of a third reason for doing this, is that they're trying to implode the U.S. dollar. They're going to let it. They want this to happen. They want the U.S. dollar to fall. We talked about it a couple of days ago. The Saudis are considering breaking the U.S. petrodollar, which has been the linchpin of our financial system here. The endless sanctions under Barack Obama, ratcheted up by Donald Trump, and now ratcheted up again by Joe Biden, have motivated many more countries around the world to ditch the dollar. Our debt is completely unpayable at this point. And it's just an open secret that the United States can never pay back the money that it has borrowed. So they may just be deciding to go ahead and blow up the U.S. dollar and take us into a digital currency. In an executive order issued on March 9th, President Biden called for the federal government to consider establishing a, quote, U.S. central bank digital currency. And this may be exactly where we're headed. Our own Josh West told me last night that Glenn Beckett, or somebody Glenn Beckett interviewed, had said that they're expecting this by January. This is to be opposed with every breath that we have. The vaccine passports are to be, I've said many times, playtime is over. I want to enjoy my life. I had a lot of fun with my friends and my kids, and I live a normal life, but we're going to have to take some of that, our fun and leisure time, to continue to fight. I know a lot of people are out there fighting CRT in schools. We've been fighting vaccine mandates. We've been fighting lockdowns. We've been fighting a lot of things. This fight is probably just heating up. If they try to get us, are they just purposefully trying to destroy the U.S. dollar and then corral us all into a Fed coin? And understand what this means. It means essentially a cashless society where everything that you do is tracked and traced. And if you misbehave, you may not have access to the money that your employer has to pay you through this central bank digital currency. Everything would constantly be at risk of being confiscated. You would have somebody come to a garage sale and buy some of the things that you own at a garage sale, and these would be transferred through a Federal Reserve digital currency, which would be logged for purposes of taxation for all of you tax slaves out there who continue to pay taxes thinking it's your patriotic duty. They're going to make it real simple for you. You may not even have to file a tax return anymore. That'll save you some time. What about how about that for convenience? What they'll do is they'll just figure it out because they know every nickel that you earned and where it came from, and they'll be able to just go in and take that money out whenever they feel like it's time that you pay. This is the social credit score. This is everything. The Fed appears to be on the track to absolutely destroy the U.S. dollar. And this is also because of all of the politicians in Washington, D.C. The criminal class in Washington, D.C. is a clear and present danger to the United States at this point. I'm going to take a break, come back, and play you something that Joe Biden said yesterday, which is really very ironic. And it's also so disgusting. The media is so disgusting. They are actually, the media may be, even more than government, the media may be who gets us into World War III and precipitates this this collapse of the U.S. economic system. It may be the media that actually drives this bus. They're so bad. This baiting question to Joe Biden just makes my stomach turn. And the way he answers it is even worse. We'll get to that when we come back. You're listening to the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I got reports from somebody here at the station. The gas is down at the local gas station here, down 2 cents. Oil trading right now at $101 a barrel. It was $137 when prices spiked, so it's still down 30%. I'm just wondering how long. Now, I know there's a lag. When oil, a barrel of oil pops up, it takes a few days for it to hit the pump. You know, they've already purchased the oil at cheaper prices. It takes a while for that to work through the supply chain, but it just always seems to work that they go up with the price of the barrel of oil. They don't come down as fast as the price of a barrel of oil. I was listening during the news break at the beginning of the hour. One of the national sponsors was running an ad that says, I guess they've been running it for a while, Goldman Sachs predicts oil could hit $100 a barrel. I think they need to change that ad. It got there quickly, very quickly. You know, a lot of people are blaming Joe Biden for the price of oil. He does have some culpability in that. He's terrible for energy policy. There's no doubt that his presidency and his administration has got some of the cost in oil. The war in Ukraine has got a little bit of cost of oil, but really this is a decline in the purchasing power of the dollar ultimately. The dollar right now is still supposedly strong, and it is a safe haven around the world for some reason, and I have no idea why. It's backed by absolutely nothing in a country that has no regard for diluting the amount of currency out there constantly, but for some reason the U.S. hangs on there. But that may not last long. So to kind of go on with that thought, this was to kind of tie a couple of things together. This was yesterday, I believe. One of these nut jobs in the media, the Wall Street warmongers, It's amazing that, you know, we've always thought there was this left tilt in the mainstream media, but it's not even really left. It's corporatist, woke weirdness, I guess. It certainly isn't classical or even traditional liberalism in the media anymore. They are actively trying to provoke war. I don't have the clip. It was like 4 minutes long. I didn't want to bother with it. But someone was asking Jen Psaki, I mean, Ukraine's asking for these weapons. They say that's all they need. Why won't you send fighter jets and weapons and establish a no-fly zone? I mean, this is a member of the media, and it was no surprise to see this picture of this reporter. She was all masked up. Nobody around her was wearing a mask, but she's still a hysterical, trying to kick off World War III. And then this was, I believe, yesterday, Joe Biden's shuffling off from one of his speeches, and reporters shout out questions to him, and he's too stupid to know he shouldn't answer. And so this was the question and answer. I don't know if you can hear this because it's this gaggle of freaks screaming questions to Joe Biden. But they ask him, would you, I mean, this is the media baiting an elderly senior citizen with dementia into just parroting something back so they can get the soundbite. Would you call Vladimir Putin a war criminal? And Joe Biden says, oh, yes. Did you ask me what I call? Yes, I'll call him a war criminal. That's a hell of a thing for someone of Joe Biden's history to project onto somebody else. Joe Biden, being a blood-soaked war criminal, no doubt about it, has cheerleaded the U.S. into endless invasions, death, murder, mayhem. And I looked up, actually, the war crime. You know, what constitutes a war crime? We'll get to that in just a second. Got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me? All right, if you call in, you're going to have to hold for a few minutes. It's just me barricaded in this in the studio talking about what we're talking about here. But this is, you know, Joe Biden, I mean, of course, he shouldn't even be there. Joe Biden is a clear and present danger to the country, as he is. He will stumble and mumble us into a war. But it is amazing that, I mean, Joe Biden is himself a war criminal. What Vladimir Putin is doing in Ukraine is bad. There's no doubt about it. I get it. I understand why he did it. I wish he wouldn't do it, and I wish he'd stop it. But I get it. But war crimes include murder, torture, or other cruel and inhumane treatment, including mutilation, taking hostages, intentionally directing attacks against the civilian population. These are all things that the United States is guilty of. You know, you understand that Donald Trump's targeting of the Iranian general, which for some reason conservatives cheered. I don't think you'd like it if one of your favorite generals here was assassinated in the middle of the day. But it is this idea of, well, it's a cult. It's a cult where you just justify anything because you think it scores a point. We just assassinated Soleimani. Joe Biden has overthrown governments. He has looted other countries of stuff. Pillage is a war crime. Pillage is one that really bothers me because we're in the process right now of pillaging a country, and it's so obvious and so obviously an international war crime, and the fact that the United States just gets away with it as we occupy the oil fields of Syria and we just take their stuff. Now, I've pointed out many times, people would see this very clearly if it was China had moved into the West Texas oil fields and just cordoned them off, set up a security perimeter, and they were just taking all the oil from the West Texas fields and shipping it off with Chinese companies making all the money off of it. We would obviously know that is very wrong. But when Donald Trump takes the Syrian oil, and now Joe Biden is just stealing Syrian oil so they don't have the money to rebuild their country, we somehow think that, well, that's okay. At least he's getting something for it. I don't know. Are you feeling the effects of stealing Syrian oil at the pumps right now? Do you feel like you're getting a good deal? Because Trump and Biden have stolen Syrian oil. And here's how you tie these things together. Between the financial side, Joe Biden calling Vladimir Putin a war criminal after being baited into it by one of these people in the press. There's a story about Russia warns the United States, we have the might to put you in your place. Russia warned the United States on Thursday that Moscow had the might to put the world's preeminent superpower in its place and accused the West of stoking wild Russia-phobia or a wild Russia-phobic plot to tear Russia apart. Dmitry Medvedev, he served as a president from 2008 to 2012. He's now the deputy secretary of the Russian Security Council, said the United States has stoked disgusting Russia-phobia in an attempt to force Russia to its knees. And you'll hear a lot of conservatives outraged about this, that Russia's threatening us. We've been threatening Russia for 30 years, up to and including today. But they say something like this. The same thing happens with Iran. Oh, they chant death to the United States over there. Those mullahs, we should just nuke them off the planet. Well, have you noticed that we've been strangling their country since 1953? Is it really surprising to you that they chant death to the West, death to the United States, call us the great Satan? We've had our fingers around their throat for 50 years. What? No, excuse me, 70 years we've had our fingers around the throat of Iran. How dare they not be happy with us? But this is considered a threat. Here's the thing I don't think Americans can really understand, because very few people understand the monetary system, understand geopolitics at all. Russia and China, who are now buddies because of Barack Obama, Donald Trump, and Joe Biden pushing them together by attacking them endlessly with sanctions, both countries. Russia and China can destroy the United States without firing a shot. There's a lot of talk now about nuclear war and World War III. That would be a very messy affair for everybody involved, particularly if nuclear weapons were ever involved in this stuff. I would imagine that Russia and China understand they don't need to do any of those things. Now, I don't know that they're going to shrink from that. Should we decide to do a no-fly zone over Syria and actually engage the Russian military with NATO, which would draw, it would literally kick off World War III with all of the NATO nations coming to the aid and fighting against Russia, and China would weigh in on Russia's side, and we're off to the races there. But short of that kind of military conflict, Russia and China are just probably sitting back in their chairs going, do we pull the plug now or when? Are we ready? Because if our politicians and our Federal Reserve, again, it's all in D.C., the greatest threat to this country is in Washington, D.C. It's not your liberal neighbor. It's not your Trump-supporting cousin. It's not Venezuela. It's not Iran. It is the monetary system, because we have made ourselves so vulnerable to this stuff. All that Russia and China need to do is just break the dollar. Break the U.S. dollar. And as we said, Saudi Arabia is considering trading oil now in the yuan with China. And believe me, Saudi Arabia, this idea that they're our friend and ally. We fight wars for them. We've got 3,000 of our troops over there protecting their kingdom. We've done everything that they've asked. They are fair weather friends at the least. And they will abandon us in a minute. But if they stop using the dollar, and there's the BRICS nations. What is that? It's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, I believe, are the BRICS nations. And most all of these countries have gone crossways with the United States, a lot of them financially. India has said that they will trade with other people in other currencies as well. So we may start to see some threatening of India. But if they start a new currency using this BRICS group of countries, a gold-backed currency, this is all Russia and China really need to spearhead to take down the United States. Not a shot needs to be fired. And the reason we'll be vulnerable to that is because of Nancy Pelosi and Roger Wicker. The reason we're vulnerable to that is because of Joe Biden, Barack Obama, and Donald Trump and George W. Bush. Both parties, the Washington, D.C., have made us so incredibly financially vulnerable that all these countries have to do is pull the plug on the dollar, and I think they have it completely in their power to do so. Now, it does take some setting up of a system, but we have been leveling sanctions and weaponizing the U.S. dollar for decades. They've had a long time to prepare for this. And if Russia and China really decide that it is just time to get this annoying United States out of everybody's business, do I like the Russian government? No. Do I like the Chinese government? Absolutely not. No, but hell no. But they've got their own countries to run. They've got their own interests. And the United States is just constantly an annoying source of moral superiority that runs around bossing everybody around with the U.S. dollar. And I do know at some point they're going to get sick of it. You see, Brazil, I told you earlier, they've raised their interest rates to 11.5%. They are attempting to tackle inflation. Does the Brazil government good? No. They probably created their inflation the same way we created ours, and now at least they're being serious about fighting it. And they will end up, if they fight it, they'll have a period of a downturn in Brazil, and they will emerge more financially sound. Here in the United States, we raise a quarter point. We just want to keep on printing. We are the paper tiger. We are an illusion of power around the world, and these other countries know. Joe Biden calling Vladimir Putin a war criminal is laughable, but it's also dangerous because at some point the rhetoric gets to that stage where these countries who can attack us financially, I'm not even talking about a cyber attack. I'm talking about just a, we are a couple of headlines away from the U.S. dollar losing 20 or 30% of its value overnight. And if I know that, and I learn it from people that are much smarter than me, and those people know that, you can bet your booty that Vladimir Putin and Chairman Xi and the leaders of India, of Brazil, these people also know that they have the power to run a couple of headlines, set up a couple of institutions. I ran across something, I think it's called CIPS, C-I-P-S, don't even know what it stands for, but it is a basically, it's an alternative to the SWIFT system that we've cut Russia off of. So they've already got these things that are going to bypass American sanctions. And if those become widely adopted, if the U.S. dollar, if the petrodollar doesn't exist anymore because Saudi Arabia is trading in other currencies, if these big countries introduce another currency that is backed by gold, actually backed by something, the world will have more faith in that. How long do you think people are going to loan us money at 2% interest on a 10-year bond? If they can go with something that actually has some intrinsic value. I'm just telling you, we are a couple of headlines away from these countries finally saying, all right, we're done with you. We put up with your crap for a while because we didn't really want the headache of having to remake the entire financial system across the world. And we know that the United States will probably lash out militarily when we do this because they're going to just be flailing to try to keep the system together. We are a couple of headlines, a couple of headlines away. And this ridiculous quarter point raise from the Federal Reserve showed the entire world we're not serious about doing anything except printing more money and accumulating more debt. We have no desire, no political will, and we haven't had an incentive because the world has put up with this dollar system for so long. But we just telegraphed yesterday, we have no intention of doing anything but just continuing to print money. And I don't know when this comes. This headline could drop tomorrow. There will be a day. I think most of us listening to this show right now, and myself, we will live to a day where we go to bed one night and wake up the next morning and we have lost 20% of the U.S. dollar. 20% in a night. These things happen very slowly, and then all of a sudden, the U.S. dollar has lost, I think it's something like 98% of its value over the past 100 years since the Federal Reserve System came into play and they kept printing money, and that's just accelerated over the years. So it's lost like 98%. It's a slow burn, right? I mean, it's been almost 110 years of the Federal Reserve, and it's just slowly, steadily lost more and more and more of its value. But we could just go the rest of the way down very, very quickly. And this is this danger of what we're doing with Russia. I think it's more dangerous than just the military altercation that's going on in Ukraine, particularly for the lives of Americans. And then the Fed will rush in, along with our government, to introduce this new currency, the new Fed coin, to try to keep everybody in that system. This is the danger that we face, and most Americans have absolutely no idea that we are this vulnerable. We'll be right back. At first I was afraid, I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along. All right, only a couple minutes left here, and then we're going to come back with America's Prosperity and talk about some things we've actually got some control over, and that should be our state legislature for whatever control we actually exercise on them. You know, this is one of my least thought out shows probably that I've ever done. I come in usually with tons of notes and research and clips and all kinds of stuff, but I'm just, my mind is just reeling with how vulnerable the United States is. I can imagine a scenario, it might not happen, but we saw the Soviet Union collapse. If we really, if the world just decided to gang up on us and say, we'd take down the dollar, we've got 800 military bases around the world. I'm not sure we could get our soldiers home. We're sure as hell not bringing home all the equipment. I mean, if we have a true currency crisis here, you understand the empire is over. I think we may have troops stationed all over the world just stranded, going to stay with host families until somebody in their family can send a plane ticket to them. I mean, I don't know. This is these are dangerous times, and it could happen tomorrow, and it could happen in 20 years. I don't know. That's the thing about it. I'm a boy who cried wolf. As I've known this vulnerability building and building and building, and it's gone a lot further than I thought it would have in the first place. So I've been wrong about this over and over again. I may be wrong for another 20 years, but the math is not in our favor here. And the rest of the world, I think they're just sick of our crap. And eventually they're going to act. I just don't know when. We'll be right back.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining us today. We are in a Thursday between 10 and 11 o'clock. We have representatives from Americans for Prosperity, the People's Lobbyists down in the Capitol, as the session is in full swing, fighting for economic freedom here and to advance us in terms of economic freedom here in Mississippi. So we've got Forrest Thigpen in with us today. Forrest, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Mike.
How much longer is in the legislative session now?
It's supposed to be about 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, so we're at the tail end of it. I know there's several things probably still pending we'll talk about, but the big one is, and probably what most people are paying attention to now, is state income tax, and are there positive things in that direction?
Yeah, well, there are some surprising things that happened this week, because normally what happens when both houses have an issue that they have their position on, they'll each pass their own bill, they send it to the other house, and the normal thing is, and this happened on a lot of things this year, as usual, they'll strike out what the other house did, and they'll replace it with whatever they've already approved. So the House usually, you know, takes action, sends a bill over. Well, if the Senate took action on the same topic and they send it over to the House would say, well, we've already debated and voted on this, so let's just strike out what the Senate did, put in what we've done, what we've already voted on, and then we'll go to a conference and work out some kind of agreement.
Yeah.
Instead of just going through this whole debate over and over again. However, this week, both houses actually made substantial changes in their original tax plan that they had passed earlier in the session. That we weren't real thrilled with either one of them that passed earlier. They were so different that it seemed like it would be impossible to reach any kind of
compromise.
That's
how it sounded to me in talking about it the last couple of weeks. It just felt like this was going to be another kind of infighting deal that was going to just end up in a dud.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like. However, the House made substantial changes to their plan. The Senate made some changes to theirs. And I see some things in each of them that I'm in my hopeful mind, I'm thinking they're leaving themselves some room for negotiating. So if they go into conference, they're not just saying it's my way or the highway.
Right.
But the House made some substantial changes that actually make it much more palatable to us, at least. Their plan they passed earlier this year would have put the income tax on a track to elimination. It would have done some things I'll tell you in a minute, but to pay for it, so that because the if they were to eliminate the income tax altogether in a short amount of time, what would happen is what happened in Kansas a few years ago when they tried that, and it backfired because in the next election people were so mad that things had been cut that in Kansas, which had been Republican forever, the Democrats actually took over not only the governorship, but if not legislative control, certainly a lot of legislative seats.
Oh, wow.
So they ended up reversing
the
tax cuts because they had not gone about it wisely. They also had what the real problem there in Kansas was. They increased spending while they were cutting taxes because they had a big surplus. And so that's a concern that we have had. But anyway, but to pay for it, they would have increased the sales tax, the general sales tax, by 1.5% from the current 7% sales tax. It would have gone up to 8.5%, and that would have helped pay for the eventually eliminating the income tax. But it also, in their earlier plan, they would have reduced the grocery tax, and they would have reimbursed the counties, so they would cut car tag prices,
right,
which is really just the ad valorem tax on cars, by half. So in the new plan, they said, well, the Senate, and this is accurate, the Senate was just not going to pass any kind of tax increase. And so the House has taken out the 1.5 cent increase in sales tax. So they leave the sales tax at the current rate. They do still reduce the grocery tax, but at a much slower pace. It's going to take 12 years to just get that down to 4% because they're going down 0.25% per year.
Oh, wow. How bold.
Yeah, well, and then they took out the car tag deal, which is good. The state doesn't need to be subsidizing the local governments. And so that was, those are pretty significant changes. So it will take longer. They also, the mechanism that they were using to cut that or to eliminate the income tax, instead of just cutting the rates, which is our preference, they set it up to where the standard deduction and the exemptions total. Their first plan was $40,000. So if you make less than $40,000, you wouldn't pay any income tax in the state. They've lowered that to $25,000. Because they took the sales tax.
What is it now? It's 10,000 now?
It's about 8,300 now.
Okay.
It's 6,000 for the exemption and then 2,300 for the standard deduction.
Yeah.
And so the way they've been dealing with it is they just total those up and they've been saying, 40,000, now it's going to be 25,000. So, and then the real benefit of the original plan was the same as last year when they were going to cap the growth of spending, the growth of revenue to the state at 1.5%. Now, this was before inflation took effect last year, so that might not need to be adjusted just for reality's sake. But the idea is that if state revenue grows more than 1.5%, they changed it to 1.6%, but I won't even go into why they did that. It was silly. But I think that's a negotiating point. But if the first 1.6% of revenue growth will go into the general fund, just like it normally would. The next, they capped it, $150 million will go toward the following year increasing the exemption and deduction so that you can make more money without having to pay income tax. So that's how they phase that out over time, is using growth in state revenue. There's really no way to make this super simple.
Yeah, well, that's kind of my question in asking you. I mean, is this just everybody trying to get their little parts in there? Why does it have to be so complicated? I mean, there's got to be, people talk a lot about a flat tax as opposed to what we've got, that you could raise the same revenue and take the burden off the taxpayer. On the federal level, I'm opposed to income tax anyway, but it just seems like everybody's trying to, if we give you this, then we're going to do this and we're going to do this little calculation here. It just feels like there's so many moving parts. Does it have to be that complicated?
Actually, it could be a lot more complicated. So the idea is that because income tax makes up a third of the state general fund budget, that's what the legislature really has jurisdiction to really spend, you can't just cut out a third of the budget and not have some consequences. So So they're looking for ways to soften that, you know, to phase it out over time. And so there are different ways of approaching that. And this idea of raising the exemptions and standard deductions, no other state's done that. I don't think that's a necessary thing. I don't particularly like that approach.
Yeah.
Because one of the reasons is, and this is one of the benefits of what the Senate has done in their latest plan, is the better thing is to take the top rate of 5% and just lower that, phase that out.
Right. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1,
yeah.
0.
Yeah. Because if the idea, and this is the stated idea, is that we eliminate the income tax because, and, you know, you can say that it's just a justice thing, you know, a morality thing. But for the public view, they're saying that the reason we need to, the benefit of eliminating the income tax economically to the state is it will bring more people in, it will keep people here, people will grow their business here instead of, you know, going somewhere else. And so if that's going to happen, if we're going to have that benefit, what businesses look at is what the top rate is.
Right.
Because they're saying, you know, I'm already going to be taking, you know, paying 5% rate or the top rate. So if I'm going to invest in the state and I'm going to have income, what is the marginal cost of that? And so they look at the top rate. So it's better to lower the rate than it is to increase the exemptions and deductions, in my view. And,
yeah.
So what and I would go ahead and say what the Senate has done, the changes they make, is they actually had their latest plan is to take the 5% and lower that over 4 years to 4.6%. So reducing it.
10 basis points a year?
Yeah. For the first 4 years, and then in year 5 through 8, they would phase out the 4% bracket, which is on the income, taxable income from $5,000 to $10,000. This is getting too complicated, but anyway, to phase out the 4% rate, which is 4% on a $5,000 block of money, so that's $200.
Right,
so that's a $200 tax break from that. Now, to their credit, that's all they had in the first one, except for some other gimmicks. But at least this time, they're lowering the top rate. And significantly, the other thing they added this time, the Senate bill, suspends the gas tax for 6 months.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, and that's just a reaction to high gas prices. That was something that was not included when they started the session.
Correct.
But now they're looking. And what is the state portion of taxes on each gallon of gas?
18.4 cents.
Yeah.
So that's it would be, you know, 18 cents less. And that would cost $260 million, I don't remember, $200 million plus.
Right.
And
that the state wouldn't collect.
Right. And so they would use some of our current surplus to send that to the Department of Transportation so that, you know, there would still be money for roads that gas tax goes toward.
Yeah.
But, you know, it seems to me it would be better to take that money and further lower the rate, the income tax rate, than to do a one-time $200 million thing that really won't have an effect on people that much anyway.
Yeah.
Because there's no guarantee that the gas stations won't just raise their prices, you know, won't drop it that full 18 cents.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I guess that's true, too. Well, you're talking to somebody here, and I imagine most people listening are not kind of knee-deep in,
yeah,
you know, all the political side and all of it. We have a supermajority Republican state here. Are they cutting anything at the state level? Are they reducing agency budgets? Are they doing anything that would be considered fiscally brave or responsible? Or is our government going to grow year after year after year under Republicans?
It will continue to grow. It has grown less. There are fewer, I don't remember the numbers, but a fairly substantial number fewer state employees than there were 8 years ago.
So why does it cost more?
It varies. Well, one of the things is, you know, they have certainly not cut, and they've been increasing the education budget overtime. And that's another big issue this year is the teacher pay raise, which is $260 million a year, or 220, depending on which house plan you use. And then there's always increases in Medicaid costs. So there are various reasons, and now we'll have the medical marijuana regulations that will increase the number of employees. It varies, but you raise a good point. There are not a lot of conservative things that are really happening that you would expect from a supermajority Republican.
Are there states around the country who have got legislatures that have moved their states in the right direction by actually shrinking the size of their government and keeping more money in the population's hands, which has made the state more successful? Or is politics in every state house the same? I mean, is there anybody kind of leading the way on this?
No, it's pretty much the same. It's the forms of taxation are different.
Right.
Like in Texas, for instance, that has no income tax, they have super high property taxes.
Right.
And they have some business income taxes that are fairly significant. So it varies on how much they let their people keep their own money. But the size of the government, the state government, tends to not shrink much. In Mississippi, the general fund, which is kind of what people refer to as the budget, that doesn't include the federal money, doesn't include fines and fees and that kind of thing, is about $6 billion right now. And about 85% of that is Medicaid, education, corrections, debt service, and one other, maybe mental health.
So are we getting to the point where, kind of like the federal government is, so much of the money that is in the federal budget is kind of off the table because it just becomes entrenched. It's uncuttable. It's promises already made, those kinds of things. Yeah, entitlements. So, yeah. I mean, are we approaching that too, where it's just that side of our state budget is growing so big that it's just got its own trajectory, and even nibbling around the edges of some of the discretionary spending doesn't make that big of a deal?
Yeah, and they also could, and for some reason, even though we have, we had $1 billion surplus last fiscal year.
Right.
Remember, this is a $6 billion budget. We had $1 billion surplus.
Yeah, lot.
Last year. It looks like we're going to have $1 billion surplus this year, and yet they're still passing bond bills to borrow money to do projects. I mentioned the debt service. That's about $450 to $500 million a year.
Wow, really?
To pay interest and principal on the debt. And they generally think, okay, well, each year we're paying off about $400 million, so let's pass another $400 million in bonds so that we don't. And to their credit, that has not been increasing over time. Our total debt burden as a state has remained about the same for probably 10 years or so.
Well, see, that's interesting to me, and I know how you like our conversations on monetary policy, but they've been able to contain debt service because interest rates have been so low, but that's starting to move differently. So if they were to maintain that level of debt service, they actually won't be able to issue as much debt if interest rates go up. You know what I mean? Right. I mean, yeah, so that's going to be interesting to see how states that have gotten themselves kind of addicted to debt react to that.
Yeah. Yeah, and part of the crazy thing is that they will pass a bond that's generally 20-year bonds with state sales, but they'll use that to pay for repairs and renovations that will have to be redone in 10 years.
Right.
And it used to be, in the old days, that they didn't borrow money to do that. That was a part of the regular budgets of the agencies and the universities.
It's an anticipated expense. You should be able to plan for it.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're not doing that.
Yeah.
When we come back, I have another idea, speaking of that, on how they should be anticipating things.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We're talking to Forrest Thigpen with Americans for Prosperity as we kind of wind up the legislative session. It looks like there may be some movement on income taxes, but my head's spinning from what all they're doing, and I'm underwhelmed by the dollar figure that Mississippians will be saving, at least in the near future. But I guess a little is better than nothing. We'll be right back.
I tear my heart open. I sold myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much, and my scars remind me that the past is real.
All right, we are back talking to Forrest Thigpen with Americans for Prosperity. We've been talking about state income tax stuff. So when will this all be decided? When will we know if we finally get something on the income tax?
The very end of next week, so actually weekend, they call it conference weekend because they have to reach agreements on appropriation and revenue bills, and most other bills to some degree by not this Saturday and Sunday, but the following.
Yeah.
So it's the only weekend that they work during the session, but that it happens every year because of where the deadlines fall. So we have about 10 days or so. And so what we're encouraging people to do is to call their legislators and say, we are in favor of eliminating the income tax. It can just be that simple. You don't have to talk about bill numbers or which plan, the House or Senate, it doesn't matter. Especially in the Senate, probably would help. But really, call your state, House or Senate, and Senate members who represent you in the state capitol. This is not U.S. Capitol. This is not Wicker and Hyde Smith. This is your state legislators. And on our Facebook page, Americans for Prosperity Mississippi Facebook page, there is a link that has just been posted in the last hour or so, where if you don't know your who your legislator is, you can go to this link, put in your address, and it'll tell you who they are. And then you can follow the links there to how to contact them, email or phone call. So that's we're encouraging people to let their legislators know we're in favor of eliminating the state income tax. And then however they work out the details, we want them to do it responsibly. We don't want them to do it haphazardly so that it doesn't end up backfiring. But the simple message is I support eliminating the income tax responsibly.
And what kind of best case scenario or what the average of all of these different plans would be, how many years would it take to fully eliminate the income tax? I know if it's based on growth models, there's gray area there, but just an idea. Are we talking about 10 years, 20 years? I mean,
well, the chairman of the House committee, when he was presenting it on the House floor, said that he's guessing, he's estimating it would be about 12 years to phase out the income tax totally. And that's based on the growth model that they have.
Yeah.
The Senate plan actually doesn't have a plan. I mean, they would just go down to 4.6% and then see where we are. That's what the Senate chairman said.
Yeah.
So I think there is room there. I think both houses left themselves room, negotiating room. And so I think when they go to conference, what I would like to see, actually my preference would be for them to come immediately down to 4% as the top tax rate. Don't worry about eliminating the current 4% bracket. Just bring the 5% down to 4%. So everybody pays 4% on their taxable income and then start phasing that out over time.
Yeah.
And, based on a growth model. So I think that's doable, and I'm hoping that they'll agree to do that.
Well, inflation shows up in state coffers, doesn't it? I mean, if everything's more expensive, sales tax is higher, everything is higher, so money goes in there. So actually, if they, I don't know what they're going to take their 1.5, 1.6 growth estimate up to, but that could benefit us essentially because the state's going to be awash in new cash with everything costing more.
Yeah, until we crash.
Right.
And
yeah.
I heard your last hour and I thought, man, this guy's depressing.
Man, I tell you what, I see some bad things coming, and I've been wrong for so long that I could be wrong for another 20 years. But we're so vulnerable right now, and I don't know. These things seem simple to us out here, Forrest. You have to understand, us simpletons out here, we think. I mean, if the goal of the state is to attract new industries, to attract business owners, to create things in here, then why is it going to take 12 years to do that? What is it about 2034 that we really want to get cranking on bringing new businesses into the state that desperately needs jobs and stuff now, and new industry now?
Yeah.
And so, all this wrangling, all of these calculations, all of these figuring, all of this projection and stuff like that, that just delay. It almost makes the goal just to pass something, to not to realize the jobs. Because if you wanted the jobs and you wanted to attract people to the state at a time where people are migrating all over the United States,
right,
then you would do something now, something bold, something now to say, hey, look at us. In 3 years, there's going to be no income tax here.
Yeah. Well, economically, the thing that makes most sense is to reduce the tax on the wealthiest. But that's the least
popular,
yeah, and you know it, and won't happen. So that's part of the answer to this. When I came in today, I was thinking, okay, I've got this in my mind on how to make this simple. And then as I started talking, I thought that's only simple to me because I see how complicated it has been.
Yeah.
But the reality is that there are political calculations that are not necessarily just how can I be reelected, but the reality of if this is going to be enacted and sustained, we have to take into consideration the fact that people don't necessarily understand the economics of it.
And when they pass these plans, say they get something through with all of these different kind of moving pieces and projections that it will phase out at this rate or whatever, does the legislature can come in next year and completely change the whole thing again?
They can, yeah. But I will say that 5 years ago, I think, the legislature passed a bill to phase out the 3% bracket. So on your first $5,000 of taxable income, you paid 3%. On the next percent, next $5,000 was 4%. Everything else is 5%.
Yeah.
They phased out that lowest bracket over 4 or 5 years, and they did that, and it didn't come back and change that. And then they also phased out the, or in the middle of phasing out now, the franchise tax, which is, we were one of the only states that had this on business investment. So we actually taxed investment. We taxed your assets.
Yeah.
Not just your income. So that's being phased out. Nobody's even talked about, well, a few people have talked, but nobody in leadership has talked about it doing anything different with that. So once it's on track, they generally, not only in that instance, but in others, they generally don't come back and change that.
Yeah, short of something like some kind of a fiscal emergency or right, something that forces their hand to do that.
Yeah.
All right. I know you've got to leave early today. We're going a little bit long. I don't want to take a break and bring you back because I know you got a lunch to get to. Is there anything else that you want to talk about?
Well, the initiative process is moving along. Both houses have passed only a tiny variance in version, so they'll go to conference. There's a lot of political shenanigans going on with
that's strange.
I'm shocked. Shocked.
The first year that's happened,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Ever. There are far more bills in conference this year than ever before because of the tax bill. And
so what is everybody saying? Hey, I've got my bill. You might not have normally considered it, but if you want my vote on taxes, then you need to consider this bill that I put in there.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
If you want your bill passed, then you'll support me on the
right,
tax cut.
Yeah.
So so the initiative process.
What a fun group of people.
There's hardly any difference between the two, but that they did a mechanism called a reverse repealer that makes it go to conference. Anyway, so I don't have any doubt that they're going to come out with something. But what's passed both houses is that it doesn't the initiative process will be restored with the correct math that the Supreme Court was fussing about. And but you will only be able to enact or change laws. You won't be able to amend the Constitution.
Right. I can understand that, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And the benefit of this, too, is that unlike the previous thing where the legislature got to put an alternative on the ballot, the legislature won't have any say in this.
If straight up or down vote on whatever the people just want.
If you get enough signatures, it goes on the ballot, and then the legislature can't amend it for 2 years after that.
Yeah.
Unless there's an emergency that would require 2/3 vote of both houses. Anyway, so that's moving, and that's an encouraging thing.
Yeah. All right. Anything else that we should be keeping our eye on? Anything else that needs any action calls from people need to weigh in on?
Right now, it's just the tax bill.
Yeah.
Again, there's so many bills in conference, it's hard to know how they're going to come out. So it will be important next week to be paying attention to what's going on because the conference process is where a lot can happen
right.
in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
So we'll try to keep you posted on that.
Yeah. Are y'all like accountants at AFP? As soon as the session is over, do you go take a break and go on vacations like tax attorney, you know, attorneys, accountants do after April 15th?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
But, you know, in other cases, I mean, another aspect of it is we want to let people know what just happened.
Right. Right. Yeah. So you got to do a debrief first yeah. before you go. All right. Yeah. How can people reach you and follow your group?
Best way is our Facebook page, Americans for Prosperity, Mississippi. And, we are planning this year to do much more training of people to not only for the state legislature, but how to be a watchdog in their local area for their local governments
yes.
and school boards and all that.
Yeah. I think people have got an energy for that right now.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
And so we'll be doing that. So just be I guess the key thing is be sure you follow our Facebook page so that you'll get notices when there are opportunities and also over the next week, we'll be sending messages out what people can do on yeah. legislation.
Okay, great. That's Forrest Thigpen, Americans for Prosperity. Thanks, Forrest, for coming
Thank
in.
Thank you. Appreciate
all right.
it.
See you next time. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with me.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Forrest Thigpen had to take off. He's got a lunch, a pro-life lunch he is attending today. Flora is this little outpost out here, so we get people to pack a lunch and come on out to the station. But if they've got to be anywhere by lunch, a lot of times I got to leave early. So it was interesting talking to Forrest, though. I think education is always a big issue. I think I talked about it on the show a couple of days ago. I'd interviewed a kid for a job. It seemed like a nice kid. It certainly was. He was respectful. He was nice. He was very quiet. He was very shy, which is, you know, it happens when kids are going out, particularly looking for their first job, don't know what they're doing, and are talking to grown-ups. But this kid you could just tell the schools had let him down. Just didn't give him any marketable skills, and it's always depressing. Forrest did say, because I was kind of asking him about it, education. With all the money we spend on education gets more money and the teachers are going to get pay raises and it doesn't feel like there's any accountability. But Forrest did say we actually have started a program I wasn't familiar with to stop kids from moving from third grade to fourth grade if they weren't reading on a third grade reading level. You know, one of the big problems we have in education is just social promotion. And we just don't hold kids back because if you're not teach them first time around. It's hard. There's pressure from parents. I'm sure there's pressure from all groups to just promote these kids from grades to grades. And I interviewed these kids. I run into a lot of these kids that are good. They're good human beings. They start out like the rest of us, you know, kind of blank slate infants. And then they go straight through school with 12 years with no marketable skills. And then they come out of school and they don't achieve things or they get involved in criminal activity. And we all judge them like they're somehow just were born morally bankrupt and we need to warehouse them in jail cells or something. I mean, look, the violence is just disgusting to me in places like Jackson, too. But we all have a responsibility for giving these kids some kind of a skill. I mean, some kind of a marketable way to create a good life. Anyway, I could go off on that for a long time. It's good to know that we have put our foot down, I guess, on third grade reading. And he said that Mississippi and some of the grade levels has actually shown more improvement than other states. So maybe something's bubbling around in education. Now, if they'll take the masks off these kids and quit messing with their lives. I'm seeing headlines now. I don't know if anybody's paying attention to this because COVID's not a thing anymore with the Hitlerian invasion of Ukraine by that madman Vladimir Putin, but China is reporting big spikes. I think they've got 9 million people locked down in China right now, and now they're saying Western European countries are alarmingly seeing a rise in COVID cases. Hong Kong has seen a huge rise in COVID cases. And man, I got to tell you, I got some PTSD on this stuff. When you start hearing the Western European countries are having these big spikes in cases, how long is it before our media starts doing the headlines here of we've got a new variant? I don't think they're done with us on this stuff yet. So Hopefully the schools will at least leave our kids alone. And I think people are past this stuff, but never, never underestimate government overreacting and trapping us in a cycle of this stuff for many, many, many years. 2 years was too much. 6 months was too much. More than the first 2 months of caution was too much in an overreaction to COVID. But they are talking about big spikes in cases around the world right now. And if the last 2 years of history is any guide, that means it's coming for us next. All right, we got one more segment to finish up on the other side of this. Stick around, and we'll land the plane there.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment on today's show. I was looking through headlines during the break there. I was trying to find a story that I'd seen earlier. Couldn't find it, but I was looking at some of the coverage. I have no earthly idea what's going on in Ukraine. The media has so totally destroyed its credibility, I don't know if I believe any stories that are printed, and they could be true. There's a story right now in the Daily Star that says that Russian troops are shooting themselves in the legs to not have to go fight in Ukraine due to a collapse of morale. This could be true. It could be complete garbage. We've got two competing narratives going out right now. One is that the Russian invasion and takeover of Ukraine has stalled out. They've encountered more resistance than they thought. They're losing a ton of soldiers. Morale is breaking. They're losing the war in Ukraine. The other competing thing is Zelensky breathlessly running to the U.S. Congress saying this is a 9/11. If we don't provide air cover and planes and a no-fly zone, then Ukraine is lost. I guess the truth is maybe somewhere in the middle of those two things. I have no idea. There's Russians who say we're methodically trying to avoid urban warfare and surround these areas and make sure that they understand we've got complete power, that resistance is futile, give up, and we'll, you know, we just want to denazify the place. I don't know if that's true either. Maybe Russia's being brutal. I have no idea what's going on. If anybody has a good source, a good source on what's actually happening in Russia, and the funny thing is, I can go out and find a source that says what I want it to say. And then I could come to the show and I could report on you the person that bolsters my belief that Putin is doing what he has to do, while bad, but that they can certainly roll over Ukraine, and that Zelensky is a stooge and the U.S. has propped up this white nationalist government. I can find somebody to probably tell you all of the things that I previously think. But what I really want to find out is, what is the truth of what's happening in Ukraine? I cannot watch the mainstream media. I can't do it. I just cannot do it because I don't believe any of it. And it's gotten to the point with the mainstream media, if they report something, I almost automatically just knee jerk. And I have to control this because sometimes the media might actually report the truth. I almost knee jerk think, okay, exactly the opposite is happening. And that could be completely wrong too. But I've not seen a whole lot of footage. I've not seen a whole lot of, you know, real explanation of where troops are, what cities they have taken over in Ukraine, how much of the resistance is there. Are the citizens in the streets fighting with AK-47s and being slaughtered? I have no earthly idea what's going on. And it may be because I am so leery of anybody telling me what's going on that I don't wade into it, which has left me ignorant. I just don't know. Was it Mark Twain that said, if you don't read the news, you're uninformed, and if you do read the news, you're misinformed? I'm paraphrasing that, but it's to some degree there. And boy, that's exactly what I'm in right now. I'm uninformed as to what's going on in Ukraine, but I'm scared that if I tune into any major media source, I'm just going to be misinformed of what's going on in there. So I'm in the dark. I guess this thing will settle out. They had talked about a peace deal. There were some encouraging words a few days ago, and then we get the big net. It does not look like we have any kind of a peace thing in the offering. Apparently, someone named Michael Tracy had tweeted this out. Zelensky spoke to our Congress yesterday, I believe. This person tweeted out about it. Zelensky invokes 9/11, Pearl Harbor, and Martin Luther King question mark, to demand U.S. military action that even the most virulent hawks concede would spark World War III, and receives huge roaring ovation for this. Congress is full of complete psychos. And that's absolutely true. These are not people who would go fight the fight themselves. Apparently Roger Wicker is in Poland feeding people. He's so close. Roger, you're so close. All you need is a flak jacket and an AK, and you could be in the streets putting your money where your mouth is. Put your life on the line for these Ukrainians. I mean, Roger Wicker has been a Russia hawk all along. If he believes them to be this existential threat to planet Earth and our way of life, a threat to national security, what is he doing passing out styrofoam boxes in Poland to welcome the refugees? You know, there's all these stickers on the gas pumps of, you know, I did that. With Joe Biden pointing to the price of gas and saying, I did that. Well, Roger Wicker should have a sticker for the people that are becoming refugees and says, you know, I helped do that. Because Roger Wicker's been a war hawk, has supported these NATO expansions, has supported sending weapons into Ukraine that freaked Russia out. Sounds like we got biological labs in there. I would assume that Roger Wicker, as part of the Armed Services Committee, knows that these labs are there, and Russia might have seen them as threatening. So I really don't know what's going on. If anybody, like I say, you can always email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com. If you've got any source that you think is objective, I know there's objective people over there. There's got to be somewhere. But I don't know where to find them, and I really am very interested. It may just take weeks to figure out the full capitulation of Ukraine, or if this is drug out into a Vietnam situation with Russia, then we'll know that in due time, too. It's really sad stuff for just about everybody involved, except for the people that are perpetuating this stuff at the top of governments across the board. Anyway, this is where we find ourselves. We'll continue to monitor it. Go out, have a great St. Patrick's Day, and we'll see you tomorrow.
No Bye-bye. Matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try.